Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful, I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David, how are you doing?
Very good, Bruce. It was a very dramatic day in oil country, starting with a team meeting called suddenly, and then a media availability, and half of oil country was expecting Peter Shirelli to be fired. But by the end of the day, the Peter Shirelli-led management team made a number of big to big-ish moves, big to huge to small moves, some of them smaller, some of them bigger. The biggest one of signing was the signing of Mikko Koskinen into a three-year deal at $4.5 million per. Apparently, as far as I can tell, with no movement clause. Smaller moves were sending Ty Ratty, Ryan Spooner, and Caleb Jones to the minors. Let's start with the smaller ones. Let's go in chronological order. The first things that happened, Bruce, was Ryan Spooner and Ty Ratty being sent out. And, of course, with Spooner sent out, there was all kinds of – the internet was, like, flooded with Jordan Eberle turning into Ryan Strome, turning into Ryan Spooner, turning into a waiver wire loss for the Oilers. People rubbing their hands with glee, the Shirelli haters. And perhaps justifiably, although – I think for me, the key point in the Eberle thing, Bruce, was I always liked the player, but by the end of the 2017 playoffs, the city had become toxic for Jordan Eberle. Mm-hmm. Huge portion of the fan base had turned against him. Mm-hmm. The coach, I believe, had turned against him and had enough of Jordan Eberle's act on the Oilers. And I think this is one of those trades where Eberle wasn't going to thrive here, and for the good of the player, they needed to move him. I just think the first time he made a mistake, if he had come back the next season, it was just one of those moments where it's gotten too ugly for the player here in Edmonton. And I hate to say that because he wasn't a bad player, but they had to move him. Now, what they got for him is the issue, of course. Did they get enough for him? And then did they get enough for Ryan Strome? So what did you think of this, the whole Spooner?
Oh, man. Well, yeah. You talk about the possibility of losing them on waivers, that's really a best-case scenario at this moment.
Isn't it?
The far bigger concern is that you're stuck with a $3.1 million of his $4 million two-year salary, where the Rangers retain $900,000 of it. And so the Oilers are only on the hook for $3.1 million, but they're on said hook for another almost 1.5 years. And so if they send him down to the minors, which if, and should I say when, he clears waivers,
yes,
they'll be able to bury a little over 1 million of that in the minors, but let's call it 2 million that's still on the books. The whole point of trading Eberle, as I understood it, was to create cap room. And now they're basically pissing away $2 million of cap room by stashing it in the minor leagues for a year, potentially. I mean, jeez.
It's a disastrous kind of. I mean, Strome was signed to the same contract. Yeah. The whole issue was, I mean, there's player after player, Bruce. They leave town and suddenly the legend of the player becomes much greater than the player ever was at Edmonton. And Strome's in that book. Eberle's definitely in that book. You know, Ryan Strome, though, at least was a somewhat dependable defensive third line center and also a dependable penalty killer. And didn't score much, but Spooner, who was supposed to score, didn't score and was not in any way a reliable defender and couldn't, certainly not at center. So, I don't know, it is a mess. It's a total mess in terms of their cap having. They giving Strome the two-year contract might have been the big mistake, you know, $3 million per, because then they're stuck with him that they presumably had to, if they didn't like him, they had to move out that deal. It's pretty hard to move out a guy who scored just one or two goals. Yeah. Earning $3 million a year.
Well, here's the difference. I mean, for one thing, Ryan Strome's gone to New York, where he scored 6 goals and 5 assists, whereas Spooner had 2 and 1. Strome, as we know, had started to emerge as a penalty killer, where you're never going to see Ryan Spooner at any time. Strome, this is the part that slays me. They wanted to move Strome and bring in a scoring winger without ever looking at Ryan Strome as a winger himself. And that's where he's now playing in New York, apparently, judging by his face-off totals and so on. He's playing way more on the wing. And they never even tried him there. It was like, well, we're sick of you not scoring on playing 3C on the line with two plugs. So we're going to dump you and bring in a scoring winger to play on a line with two plugs, and that's going to solve the issue. And they never even looked at Ryan Strome as a top six winger. Like, he got like 10 minutes with McDavid last year, and they decided they didn't like it, and down he went down to the bottom six. And on the Oilers' bottom six, it's a black hole for scoring. Doesn't matter almost who you are, whether you're Ryan Strome or Ryan Spooner. Nobody scores on the bottom six.
Yeah, wasn't a great trade. Although, you know, again, Strome, the day he left, I don't remember myself feeling, oh, God, they've lost Ryan Strome. How are we going to suffer through this? I didn't feel that at all. And I think I might have underestimated one thing, what he was giving to the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. And you're right, he has started scoring. And Spooner, what we saw with Spooner was when he would arrive in a new city, he would have his outburst of scoring for usually, you know, that was his M.O., we just never got that in Edmonton. And,
never.
And he obviously has some skill and
he
can handle the puck. He didn't have a whole – he wasn't terrible here. It wasn't like he was leaking scoring chances or goals against Bruce. He was just – he just was nondescript is best
way
to put
it. I never really gave him a chance on the top six either. Like, I just really don't understand some of the thinking here.
No, they just got to keep giving Lucic endless chances there, Bruce, don't you know?
Yes, I do know. I've been watching.
Ty Ratty, now that's the one I'm more.
He might get claimed on waivers because he's a low risk bet. It's what, $800,000? But I mean, the season 60% gone. So now you're talking about $300,000. And maybe they claim him, but maybe they don't. Either way, I think he's, you know, he's probably done here. Like, seems like they made the decision on the guy. I don't know. I mean, I went to a couple games lately, and I thought he was one of the better forwards on a fairly short list of decent forwards.
He's one of the few guys, Bruce, who can take and make a pass at speed. Like, the play doesn't constantly die on his stick in the offensive end when he's playing with skilled players. Mm-hmm. I really liked him. I thought he would have been a good combination with McDavid and Draisaitl. I thought he fit in well there. And then you could have on your second line, you could have Jujhar Khaira, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Jesse Puljujärvi, who have developed some chemistry. And I thought Drew Remenda made a really apt criticism. I generally liked Hitchcock's moves, but there does seem to be an over-blenderizing. You know, if McClellan had it on Chop, the blender, it's like on puree and mulch under Hitchcock. That line of Puljujärvi, Khaira, and Nugent-Hopkins was going well, and Ratty always played well with McDavid as far as I could see. He got him the puck. He got to scoring areas. He didn't have good puck luck, but this is just, to me, it's a guy, the Oilers chucking out a guy who was getting scoring chance shots and had some bad puck luck so far this year, and I didn't like it at all. I don't like it at all, and I think it's a mistake to move him out.
Well, I went to two games. Well, I went to three games recently, and Ratty was in the press box for the last one. But the first was when they lost 7-4 to the Sharks and he got three assists. And the second one was when they lost 3-2 to the Coyotes and he got one assist. And it was a really beautiful sort of area pass to McDavid that's kind of set McDavid free on a pell-mell rush and breakaway. And, like, that was a slick play. And there's not enough slick plays going on the Oilers and guys that can, you know, necessarily get McDavid the puck. But I mean, the writing was on the wall the day that he got the three assists against the Sharks, and Hitchcock came out in the post game and said, well, from center on in he was great, from center back he wasn't so great.
I thought, well, yeah, like Alex Chase, 3 points,
if you got 3 points and the coach is kind of snarking you, then you're probably not long for this world, or at least this part of the world.
But it's like Alex Chason has been leaking scoring chances against. He's no hell on defense. And when was the last time Alex Chason made a really nice pass? Maybe I'm missing one, but to McDavid to set him up for a goal, you're probably going to think of one now, of course.
Yeah.
But
back pass to somebody last week for a goal. It was kind of out of the blue, but he did make one.
You know, he really got off to a hot shooting start, obviously. I'm not convinced. He's too slow to play with McDavid, and the play is dying on his stick quite often on that line. I don't like him there. And, I just think the Oilers, and I talked about this on the podcast last, they're just too slow. And Ratty's not a whole lot faster than Chiesman, but he is a little bit quicker. quicker to spots and the quicker with the puck, quicker thinking. And just think they need that fastness on the ice. And I didn't like that move at all, as I said.
Well, apparently they're saying Yamamoto and Puljujarvi, they're liking their games and they've made the team and they've made these other guys redundant. Well, that may be. I mean, I find it a little bit suspect. I mean, what I saw at Yamamoto on Saturday night did not have me convinced that this was an NHL player ready to rumble. And I know that, I mean, Puljujarvi, he's kind of erratic. But be that as it may, they've now got 12 forwards and 6 defensemen on the roster. So they're bringing somebody in from somewhere tomorrow because they're not going to go into a game with 20 players on the roster. They're going to have somebody around, whether they call somebody up or whether there's a deal in the works or what. You know, they cleared out a little bit of cap space, but what's going to come in? Are they going to call up? Maybe Brad Malone. Maybe we're just waiting for Brad Malone to solve things. I don't know. Well,
would there be any reason to put Caleb Jones down for a day and then bring him, recall him the next day?
No, he's down for the break.
Okay.
Like he's gone now and he'll be down there for the 10 days that the Oilers have off. Jones will still be playing. And that's wise. I got no problem with that. I mean, maybe a day early, but they figure if Petrovic is ready to go and they're going to bring him in, if they're going to sit Jones, they might as well send him out because they got to make room for Petrovic on the roster. So I think that's a defensible move. I know you really like Jones. He's been getting caved the last little while.
Bruce, they've all been getting caved.
Yeah, no, this is
the only guy who can move the puck. Like, it's not like they have any puck movers.
No, this is true.
Like Puck Chippers Incorporated.
We've got Petrovic now, though.
Exactly. One more puck chipper instead of a puck mover. I just see it as a disaster. Why don't you put him in the top four, Jones? What do you expect? Like, he's going to have some rough games.
Yep.
Put him back on the third pairing. So you have a guy on the third pairing who can actually make a direct pass up the ice. I don't get this at all. I think it's a terrible move. Mm-hmm. You're playing Benning and Manning. You're playing Brandon Manning ahead of him.
Score goal.
Yeah, he's outscoring Drake Kajula. Got one goal. Kajula's only got one assist in 7 games.
Yeah.
I really hated it. And yes, he has been caved. So has Adam Larson. Worse. Oh. He's actually made the primary stakes. Mainly Jones has been like in on trying to clean up a mistake by Larson as much as anything. And so
the pairing was not working, so they're going to look for another.
I get it in terms of if you want to get him more games during the All-Star break, but there's a game to win against Detroit. Jones is much more likely to help you win it than Brandon Manning in the lineup on your third pairing. That's my position on it. That's how I see it. And our scoring chance data completely and utterly backs that up. Manning has just been a total sieve in terms of giving up chances. Yes, Jones has had some bad games, but in terms of creating chances on the attack, he's way ahead in terms of his rate than any other Oilers defenseman, Bruce. It's not even close.
6 points in 17 games, that's pretty good. Like that's almost a 30-point pace for a D-man. That's pretty decent.
And on a team where there's no one right now who can can move the puck, I mean, they're all just they're either overcautious or unable. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was a head shaker. I don't. And Hitchcock's response when they asked him about it was a little bit odd. Like Hitchcock usually said, you know, we'll own something. But what did he say? Let me just find the quote because he was asked directly about this. Here we go. He was asked if maybe Jones had played his way onto the third pairing when other guys were coming back. And this was before Jones was sent down. And Hitchcock said, that's dollars and cents and not in my job description.
Mm-hmm.
We can express what we like, but then there's also dollars and cents decisions that you have to respect. So I stay out of that stuff. Whatever the 23 players is, I get to coach. And where he, Peter Chiarelli, wants to go and protect players, I understand that from a general manager's perspective. I don't get involved in that. So I don't know what I mean.
He's being the coach and not the GM. He's saying the way the players get moved, I mean, the Oilers have a flexibility with Caleb Jones that they got with no one else on the defense, and they chose to use it at this time with Petrovic coming back. And Hitchcock's just kind of washing his hands of the roster decisions, which isn't his area, saying, I'm going to coach whatever 23 guys they get me, and they, you know, however they have to make the cap work and all that other stuff, it's kind of out of my control. I'm sure he has.
But Jones input. Has the lowest cap hit.
I'm sure he has his input behind the scenes.
Yeah. But I don't know what. Maybe they were worried if they sent Petrovic down, they'd lose him. But if they sent Brandon Manning down, there's no way on earth.
He's the same way as Ryan Spooner with a year to run on an overpriced contract. I would just want to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Now, if they sent Matt Benning down.
I'd be stunned if Spooner got selected tomorrow.
Yeah, I would be. And same with Manning. I would be even more stunned. What about Matt Benning? Now, he might be taken if he was put on waivers, possibly.
Oh, right? Sure. He's in a somewhat different category than that. He's still, I would say, technically an up-and-coming player. You couldn't say that about Brandon Manning or Ryan Spooner.
Yeah. All right, the Koskinen signing, Bruce. What is your take?
Well, the timing is a bit strange. For one thing, coming off a weekend where Koskinen played in both games of back-to-back games in which the Oilers got lit up for a total of 12 goals, 8 of them on his watch, because he signed a one-year contract, he wasn't even allowed to negotiate an extension until January. And this is actually the exact same blueprint the Oilers followed in January of 2016 when they had Cam Talbot on a one-year deal and they couldn't negotiate with him until January, and they signed him right around this time. I don't know the exact date, but it was sometime in the second part of January, as I recall, they signed Talbot to a 3-year, $4+ million extension. So in that sense, the move is very similar. The odd thing when it comes to Koskinen is his trending. I mean, he played one game in October, so let's throw that out. Even though he played well and they won it. In November, his save percentage was .927. In December, .907. In January, .891. And I know, let's give the guy a 3-year big money extension now that he's proven himself in his 24 NHL starts. It seems, I've been saying all along, one of these two guys is going to get extended and the other guy's gone. I just didn't really expect it to happen while the team was bleeding goals against, like give them more time to prove themselves and fight it out. But now Cam Talbot is a dead Oiler walking, and maybe they're going to move him.
Bruce,
but there's no chance to bring Talbot back. No, this is true. Like I would have picked Koskinen. I would have picked Koskinen out of the two, but I would have let both compete for the job a little bit longer. And I like Koskinen. I'm not sure I like this contract. Let's put it that way.
I'm sure that I don't like Cam Talbot's game anymore. This has been a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been poor.
You have to make a decision at some point on a player. Mm-hmm. And the decision Brian Burke said on Oilers Now that they can't move this player. And Brian Burke is right. Who's going to take on a goalie who's got, what is his save percentage, like 898, 888 or
896, I think I heard.
Yeah. So out of NHL starters, where is he? He's like guys who have played 20 games. I think Talbot ranks,
28th.
Okay, he's got an 894 save percentage. He's 39 out of 42 goalies who have played 20 or more games, Bruce. So Koskinen ranks 20th right now with a .911 save percentage. And so there's two ways of looking at it. Like, you know, the small sample size is worrisome. The fact that he's trending down is worrisome. On the other hand, he showed some really good signs as well this year, and he could trend up and then his price goes up. The other thing to me, the thing that has me being okay-ish, I think, yeah, they paid him too much money. Shirelli always seems to pay too much and give too much and pay too much and give too much. It's just an ongoing story. And it will be probably one of the things that will have him fired. I mean, the Reinhardt and the Lucic deals on their own are enough that he should be fired. But this ongoing trend of giving a little bit too much on each deal, that said, Bruce, they need the starting goalie. You need to have a decent starting goalie. And who are they going to bet on? Like, who are they going to bring in the UFA market? Who are they going to get? Do they want to give up assets to trade for a goalie? This is the reality of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't just like, it's easy to crap all over a signing for giving too much money, but it's hard to get a good number one goalie. Koskinen has a chance to be that.
I agree.
And he also has a chance to do that as Skinner, as Wells, and is Sterrett and Hayden Hockey and what's the other young dude that they drafted this past year?
Who did they draft? Rodrigue.
So they have a number of goalies that they're working on who are all a couple years away, and you know they need. I think they needed to pick one of Koskinen or Talbot. This leaves a if. Let's say they don't think any of those guys, including Starrett, are ready to be the backup next year. They can essentially bring in a guy on another $2.5 million contract like Koskinen had this year to challenge Koskinen for...
Except he can't really challenge him because Koskinen's now got a three-year secure deal.
But he can challenge him for playing time.
Yeah, well, that's
and true. He can challenge him to be for the number one job. And he can challenge him to for wins. And that's what the Oilers need more than anything. So in terms of winning, I don't mind this move. I like the idea of locking up Koskinen for this long. I wish it was for $1 million a year less. Jonathan Willis, our former cult colleague now at The Athletic, looked at the market and thought about $1 million less, I think, if I'm reading them right, was about the market price for Koskinen, that sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So we got this Shirelli surcharge. But we also have a guy who has a chance to be a number one goalie for the next few years, and you got to have that. What does your dog think, man?
Well, she's got bad breath.
She was just thinking the same as what you, Bruce.
So anyway, they.
No, yeah, she's up there on your lap. She wants to be there.
I think it was a little premature. Like I said, I mean, they could have done this in February, closer to the deadline. What's the all-fired rush if you're going to, you know, he's not going to turn down that contract at any point.
It's not like if they had leverage of still having Talbot here, it's not like they used it to get his salary down. Like, I agree with you. It's a,
yeah.
Shirelli seems like the anti-Glenn Sather. I mean, you know, to go on in a negotiation with Glenn Sather, you'd have to have your pencils sharpened up. You know, you better be ready. But I don't know, like with Shirelli, you can go on with crayons and get an extra $1 million.
Well, we'll see about those no move clauses and so on. I mean, not that they really necessarily matter, other than they kind of hamstring the team during expansion and stuff. But if the guy doesn't perform, they won't be able to move him anyway, whether they technically can or can't. So the goalie position, as you know, is 100%. The guy's in the net, he's the guy. So, but they've possibly limited their options, but I got to say, I mean, we're at the point now where it doesn't almost matter what Peter Shirelli does. He's going to be viciously criticized for it.
Isn't that the truth?
But he's got most of it coming. I mean, I got to say, I'm viciously criticizing him myself at times, and I think justifiably. If I'm Daryl Cates, I'm looking at Ryan Spooner going down to the minors, when you picked the guy up just a couple of months ago and committed basically $5 million of real money to the guy, regardless of cap hit and all this other stuff, you got to pay that guy. And you paid him, first of all, not to perform, and now you're going to pay him to not even be on your team? I mean, that's not going to sit well for the person signing the checks, you wouldn't think.
You know, here's the thing, though, Bruce. I mean, if you fire him now, and I guess you can do that, someone's got to make decisions between now and the end of the year, and the Oilers are still in a playoff race. And so who's that going to be? For all we know, Keith Gretzky has been right in on the Manning decision and right in on the Spooner decision and in on all these decisions and that a lot of people hate. And really, do you want to give the job to Keith Gretzky right now? Maybe you wait till the end of the year and you have a real competition. Bob Nicholson actually has a real competition for the job and doesn't hire someone who's in the pipeline already.
Well, as long as you can get from here to the end of the year without Shirelli taking on two or three other contracts that other GMs don't like in their own teams, the way he took on the Spooner and Manning contracts. I mean, those things are hamstringing the Oilers for next year and beyond. Like there's whoever's doing the job, whether it still is Shirelli or somebody else, there is a tremendous amount of complexity involved. I mean, there's been this joke going around that Shirelli's the opposite of the guy that sold the paperclip, became a house. He sold the house for a paperclip. And this guy, Paulo Bergerbaron, who has a fairly ribald Twitter feeds that he not only did he turn the house into a paperclip, he kept the mortgage.
Anyway, you're right. Like this, these taking on of bad contracts is like the Manning contract. I mean, if Manning could play, I'm not seeing it even close. Like Spooner to me is more of a, like, he's like so many of the other wingers. He's kind of, you know, you could have sent out, you know, wise pick on Spooner, like Tobias Reeder, you know, what's he done? Milan Lucic. There's all the, you know, Spooner hasn't been the worst winger on the team.
No, we're just talking about guys that came into the team this year. And during the year, that includes Chris Weidman. It includes Brandon Manning and Alexander Petrovich. It includes Valentin Zhikov, oh so briefly. It includes Ryan Spooner. And now it includes Colby Cave. And Colby Cave, maybe he's the best one of the lot, but I mean, he's not exactly pushing the needle either. You know, I mean, where are the incremental improvements from any of these deals?
Yeah. So, yeah. So, well, let's leave it there.
Yeah. One more game tomorrow.
If we had waited to sign a UFA goalie, think about some of the UFAs we've signed in the last few years, Bruce. Eric Bellanger, Mark Fain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Andrew Ferentz, Benoit Pouliot, Milan Lucic, Andre Sekera. Sekera was a good player until he got hurt. But, I mean, do we really?
No, it's a big.
You're staring down the barrel of that. And you got to think, okay, what am I going to do? So I'm not so sure that this – I'm not so sure. Like, I think some of this angst about this trade, and there's plenty of it, it's just the angst about Shirelli and the hatred towards Shirelli, which, as you say, and I agree, there's a real justification for in terms of a lot of the moves he's made. But this one, I'm not I haven't looked at the goalie market in depth, so I can't say for sure. But I'm a little bit I worry about if they had waited to go to that UFA option this summer to get their starting number one goalie.
Well, my angst is more to do with the goalies getting rubber fatigue. And this seems to be – it's not unique to the Oilers, but the Oilers are certainly a carrier of this issue. And, I mean, you look at what happened. Even guys that started out and looked like good goalies. I mean, Devan Dubnyk, look what happened to him. But think of what happened to Ben Scrivens, how good he looked and how, you know, eventually the barrage of rubber wore him down. And look what happened to Anders Nilsson, and look what happened to Cam Talbot, you know, that came in. Their form was pretty good for a while. And then as they played behind the Oilers' abysmal defense – and it's just been abysmal for years. I don't know if there's another way to put it. And eventually they start to lose it.
And I'm not so sure with Talbot. I agree with you on those other guys, but Talbot is more overuse, more over being in too many games and not trusting the other guy. That was the big issue. That was the main issue. Because the owner's defense, you know, was not – it's starting to look – you are getting like 6, 7, 8 grade A chances a period sometimes now, which will wear you down. But it wasn't that way last year when Talbot was letting in, you know, the first shot of first grade A chance every, you know, so many game after game. So, alrighty, game tomorrow night. They got to win
tomorrow night, and then a big break. And, yeah, the trouble is they're 3 points out. So even if they win tomorrow, they go into their big break already outside of the cut line with, you know, lots of games to be played before they come back. So it's not – they're not sitting pretty. They really needed to win – they need to do more with this homestand.
What this is this break the All-Star break, or is this like their
it's
week
both.
Off?
It's both. So this is the second time in 3 years that the Oilers have managed to get their break tacked onto the All-Star break. So instead of getting two sort of medium-term breaks during the season, they got one long, what I call a rust break, instead of two rest breaks. It's twice in 3 years. Like it's going to happen to some couple teams every year, but I've had issues with the schedule just about every year. And I think the team, whoever's advocating for the team is doing a piss poor job on the schedule. I got to say, it's been an issue and an ongoing issue. And it's, I don't know whether the league doesn't listen to him or whether the league, like nobody anywhere pays attention to it except for, slide rule pushers like me or what it is. But like having those two breaks together is not in favor of the team, I don't think.
I agree with you. Alrighty. Thanks, Bruce, for talking.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll do this again tomorrow night, David, during after our game number 50.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.